RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in, everybody, to this Thursday, October 4th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. As we get further and further into this season, wanted to spend a little bit of time today. I'll talk a little bit about how I grade teams in college football, which are, I think, really important as we start to assess them, and kind of how I do it. A lot of people will be talking about different things along these lines as the committee starts to come out with their rankings in a few weeks. So we're going to get into that. We're going to go over some of the matchups that are the most intriguing of the college football weekend, answer your questions. Reminder, if you've got a question, send it to us at Chris. Contact Chris on the LandryFootball.com website. And, of course, break down some of the NFL matchups and some of the things that we're looking at for this week in the NFL and what the tape is revealing on that side of things. So we've got a lot to get to today. Want to remind you, though, first about what we do at LandryFootball.com is a lot different than anything you're going to get at other websites. And I hope that if you are watching, if you are listening to this podcast, we hope that you take advantage of getting you on board with LandryFootball.com. I know that a lot of you may say, well, I don't want to pay for anything. You know, it's get stuff free. And Lex, we do things differently, and there's a reason why we do it differently. We try to keep the advertising down on the website so that it's easy to navigate, and we try to provide a little something for everyone. You can go anywhere and get free information on the website. There's no question about that. But you get what you pay for, and for a very nominal price, you can have insights to what NFL teams and college programs pay for, just a taste of it, that gives you insights and lets you understand the game from a coaching and scouting perspective, to be able to see the game from inside the film room and understand the whys. We try to address things here through questions and answer them here. But so much of football is such a learning process. I tell everybody every day I've spent a lifetime in the world of football. And one of the great things about it is I learn something every day. Every day that I'm looking at film, I learn something. I learn something about a player, a team, a coach, a scheme. That's my mantra. That's what we do. We study the game from all aspects. So it is, we think, very unique to give you information. The volume of information and the quality of information, we think, is unlike anything that you can find on the web. So if you like this website, we'd appreciate you giving us a chance at LandryFootball.com. Check us out. Plenty of different membership options. Can you try it for a month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year? The most expensive package is $60 for an entire year. $5 a month, you can get all this content all year round, and obviously provide you the type of information that you have not been able to get anywhere else. So check us out at LandryFootball.com today, and we know you'll be pleased with the result. Okay, want to get in to a couple of things. But the first thing I really wanted to get into before I answer some questions and get into the college matchups is, you know, one of the things that people talk about, and this is kind of the grand talk around people today, is, well, who has so-and-so played? And how do we know that so-and-so's good? And, you know, what do you hear? You hear the same talking heads say the same thing. They talk about, well, so-and-so's beat so-and-so, and this team was ranked in this. none of the rankings really matter unless you know how to evaluate teams. And let's break it down to the fundamental part. Unless you know how to evaluate players, unless you know how to evaluate a collection of players that make up a team, unless you understand how to evaluate coaching, unless you understand how to evaluate scheme, unless you spend a lot of time doing it, looking at the right tape, the coaching tape, not TV copy, you're really not going to know who the best teams are. Oh, you can get some idea of, yeah, I saw this team play. They look really good to me. They blew out this team. They struggled with that team. We get in a very, very superfluous way, a very amateurish, juvenile way, we start to make conclusions about teams. We go a lot on reputations. We go not on what people are truly doing, but what we know of them of the past. And that's human nature. This is not a criticism, folks. I am not trying to be rude. I'm not trying to be a jerk, a complete ass about this. But the reality is if you, and it's one of the issues that I have of, you've got to have three elements to evaluate very well. One, you've got to have a trained eye. You've got to know what to look for. Two, you've got to have access to the right tools to be able to study the information. Three, you have to spend the time doing it. Well, who really does that? Who has all three elements? You, the fan out there. The other thing I think is important, you got to be objective. You got to really not care about who's ranked where. You just only have to care about who the best team is. Look at it as if they were just plain generic white helmets and white jerseys and nothing in blue. It just, there is no name, no helmet on the jersey. You're just looking at it. As we like to say in scouting, and I'm going to answer a question to one of our great followers about someone SCS about that. There are people that just talk to other people. We call those telephone scouts that just gather information. Well, that's fine. That's what sports writers do. That's what sportscasters do. And it's the only thing that they can do. And I don't want to deprive them of that. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. The problem is the information they're getting is only as good as where they're getting it and the qualifications of the people that they're getting it from and the objectivity. I see guys all the time. And there are guys, I think the world of Jimmy Johnson, good friend. He's on TV every week. There's someone that's had a lifetime in coaching, bright guy, knows how to evaluate, knows the game. I can't really say whether he's biased or not for a certain team that maybe he's coached. Let's just say that he's not. I think that he's pretty objective when he looks at it. But Jimmy doesn't look at film. Jimmy is on TV, and I don't blame him. He's made a ton of money, and he's living the good life in Miami Beach, and he's fishing every day. He's not looking at film. Oh, there's enough research goes in to have talking points. And now, of course, he does NFL now. The guy's on TV. It's not realistic. It's not possible for them to study film. You see the guys on TV, they do their games. They'll study the tape of the game maybe, hopefully, of the teams that are playing this coming week. But here's the thing. They're looking at the tape with a guided hand. In other words, they get access. This is part of the big money that the networks pay when doing games is they get a what's called production meetings where they can sit there and the coaches give them information. Head coaches, coordinators, players give them information that'll help them understand a little bit more about this guy and that guy and what they do and how they do it. And so they can be better prepared to broadcast the game and maybe anticipate things and have make the broadcast a more intelligent sounding. So when they look at tape, they're looking at it with, oh, yeah, this you know, number 82 is really fast and he's good. And watching it, oh, yeah, he's fast. You know, they're seeing it with their ears, not with their eyes, and they're making that judgment. Oh, the offensive line's been playing well. Well, because the offensive line coach tells them how well the team is playing. My point is their job is not to evaluate. Their job is to entertain and provide information to you and make you enjoyable to watch. But they're, quote-unquote, air quotes here, experts as to who's the best. Well, they don't know. They know more than you do because they're spending more time in it and they have more access to information. But they are not trained evaluators. They're not skilled in doing it. They're not trained to do it. They don't spend the time looking at a variety of teams. They look at what they have to look at, and then they cherry pick and see, man, that team looked good. I caught some of that game today, and I did that. Well, again, that's fine. That's certainly – we understand that. I guess my point is we understand that through the history of college football that we've had rankings. We all know in a bygone day it was nothing but rankings. And it was this ranking versus that ranking, and this team was ranked number one in this poll, and this one was ranked one in the other, and both can claim national titles. We got more teams that claim national titles that would fill 500 years of college football. But we're at least coming together to try and to mutually decide who we think is best. And everybody has their opinion. And, folks, this is what's fun about it. So I don't want to be the killjoy that says, everybody's dumb and no one knows. No. Well, my point is that this is why we have a lot of disparity of where teams are, where teams are not. We've got objectivity issues. People have a perceived bias as to what a team is. They may just like a certain school or dislike a certain school, and based upon that, it's hard for them to see a team other than the prism of how they see it. It may be a subliminal bias where people think certain things about certain programs and just assume things. And again, if you assume, you end up looking like the first three letters. You can't assume. You can't assume anything that, you know, is such. You have to look at things, and then you have to have the tools to look at it. You have to have the training, know what to look for. And then you just got to be experienced to be able to do it for years and years. So I wanted to kind of have a little conversation about how I do it, and maybe some of this might help you if you are so inclined to. You may not be able to spend a lot of time looking at, you know, every team, but maybe you want to look at four. Maybe you want to look at, let's say, six or eight teams and study them to try to determine who you think the four are when it comes time through the season. But the time to do it is now, to not assume based upon other things that it's, let's decide between these four teams. But let's look at it. I evaluate teams in about 20 categories. Then I score the percentages, and then this equates to a team grade. And then this is the determines the strength of all the teams and therefore the opponents. Now, I'm doing this for a number of different reasons. I'm looking at a lot of different things. I do consulting work that consists of, and I'm just going to focus on the college end now, but I'm looking at doing consulting work for NFL teams, looking at prospects. I do consulting work for college programs that want to get a better feel for the coaching end and how to improve what they do in their schematics, their process of evaluating, adjusting, how they play, style, situational football, all those sorts of things. So I'm looking at players. I'm looking at all the players on the team, how they coalesce. I look at the coaching. I look at, you know, the discipline, how they finish, how they play on a consistent level. I'm looking at a lot of different things. So a lot of that I take and is used for other reasons other than just saying who I think the best teams are. Here's the other thing. You have to be willing to completely adjust. If you can't sit there and look at teams and evaluate them, and if you just think something that you thought at the beginning of the year, and you just keep it that way because you got no other reason to change it because that's what I thought at the beginning of the year because that's what I read in a magazine, well, then what the – there's no reason for you to even be in a voting process. And we got a lot of guys that vote in the AP poll, sports writers, that do just that, do some sort of ranking of who they think got the best players and what happened last year, coming off, here's what we think, and then don't worry about watching the games. Well, they didn't lose, so winning is met. Well, no, you've got to decide. Winning matters, but how you play matters, how you look matters, who you're doing it against matters. All of it matters if you're picking one team, two teams, four teams, eight teams, whatever the case may be. In this case, four teams. I factor in the game results versus the quality of opponents. I factor in the game venues. But again, you have to do that with everybody. You can't sit there and say, well, I'm looking at four teams. Well, you can't just stop at four teams. Now, I know I said that's a way for you to kind of get a feel for it. But if you don't study a wide variety of programs and get to the, you know, 80, 100, 120 teams that you truly evaluate and study, well, then you really don't know the quality of the schedule. You're only looking at what the opponent's record was and what the opponent's record was. But again, you're looking at results. Remember, scouting, evaluating is not about the results. It's about the evaluating the process because the process creates the result. And that gives you the true inclination of whether a player is going to be successful, and it's the same way with a team. So don't study the results, study the process. The final checkpoint for me on all of this, when I take all this in, is how do these two teams match up that they played on a neutral field 10 times? Really look at it. So this is where when the whole, but the resume says, so for like the people that say, well, LSU should be ranked higher because they played a tougher schedule. How do you know they played a tougher schedule? Well, because Chris, Miami and Auburn were ranked really high. That's better than anything anybody else did. Who said Miami and Auburn are very good? Who said they're even top 20 good? Well, I was in the preseason and in this ranking in this magazine said, folks, none of that matters. I thought Auburn was had a chance to be a really good team this year. I've studied every snap that they've played this year. They're just not as good as I thought they would be, period. On a standard of how you evaluate teams, they're just not as good as I thought. Miami was not as good as people had them. Some people had them in the top 8 or 10 teams. Miami wasn't even a top 20 team for me. You know, again, perception and reality are two different things. I look at physical eyeball dominance, the superiority that doesn't show in stats. Okay, stats are not a good indicator. Football statistics only as relevant as your ability to sort through them and see what's important. We're going to go over kind of what's important and what's not. But a lot of things that I think are taken as ways to evaluate are not really good ways to evaluate. And I can tell you that statistics in college football are way less valuable because level of competition affects greatly. It distorts greatly the perceived value of the team or not. So as we kind of go through which key and which pivotal, keep in mind that the statistics for me that matter is when I break down film and I chart things, I'm not charting the results, but charting the process. For example, when you're looking at a team, choosing defense, for example, because defense can be very, very misleading. You can look and see a certain team defensively has really good stats. You break them down on tape, and you see there's receivers running open. You see, they're not leveraging the run, but the opposing team can't take advantage of it. They miss an open receiver. A quarterback overthrows the guy. He's late with the ball. The back can't cut back and get to the outside. Boy, that defense is playing great, right? They force three and out. Wasn't so much defense playing great. It was an offense not able to take advantage of it in those examples that I'm talking about. In other cases, you got another team playing at the same time and you break down the tape. When it's all done, you realize, man, they did a great job in coverage. The opposing quarterback made some unbelievable throws. And so when you look at it, you always have to translate that to, well, how is that going to translate to the next game and to the next? This is where that studying of the process is truly important, because it tells you how it translates to the next game and to the next and to the most pivotal games against the best talent. That is going to tell you what you have or what you don't have. I look at some things on offense. The ability to score from different positions on the field. Can they run it when they have to? And can when they pass it when they have to? The ability to run in the four-minute offense versus loaded fronts. What's the ability to move the ball in the air in a two-minute situation versus multiple coverages and pressure looks? Red zone efficiency, folks. What's your red zone efficiency? What's your third down efficiency? Do they provide personnel matchup advantages versus a variety of opponents? Those are seven crucial things that I evaluate on each team. And how they match up to a standard. Not how does it look in this game against this opponent, but how does it match up to a standard of excellence of the best teams? How do they match up? Not, well, that my team, old State U, beat that team that was ranked. That doesn't matter. How does it match up to the best standard out there? And so unless you evaluate everyone, you don't know what that standard is, right? So that's offensively what I'm looking at. Defensively, red zone efficiency. Yards given up by a defense are a reflection of a number of things and only a factor if they give up a number of explosive plays. Okay, how are they playing it defensively? Do they have a lead? Are they playing off coverage? Well, if they're playing off coverage and they're playing soft, they're defending the sticks, folks. So they're going to give up a lot of 5-6 yards for the sake of preventing the big play vertically. Okay, so don't look at the yards as something they're giving up unless they're trying to defend the short field in yards. Obviously, 3rd and 15, and you're willing to give up 8 and 10 yards, that's smart. You don't care about the 8-10 yards. You're going to overplay the deep part to prevent getting the 16 and freely give up the 6, 8, 10 yards. But if it's 3rd and goal from the 5, you're not wanting to give up 6 yards. Can I understand the difference? I know that's common sense, but yet people throw out, well, they've got the best, they've got the second best defense in the league. Don't you hear that a bunch? No, they don't. They got the second to worst defense in the league. Statistically, it shows that they've got the second best because you're talking about the wrong statistics, wrong yard. So keep that in mind. Can they defend the run with their base front? How many 8-man fronts, 9-man fronts do they have to play to defend the run? Important to know. Can they rush the passer with their base without blitzing? Blitzing is great. Blitzing is a good strategical formula if you can do it and if you can play well behind it. But if you've got a blitz to get pressure, you're going to struggle against certain teams. May not factor against anybody that you're playing on your schedule, but it might factor against your standard. How effective are they when they blitz? Everybody says, run a blitz, as if a blitz is, that's like saying throw the football. You can throw the football all you want. How well do you throw it? Do you throw it accurately? Do you catch it? Can you run after the catch? You can run the football all you want. Do you run it with power, with vision, with speed, with quickness, with determination, with finish? Blitzing doesn't mean a damn thing unless you blitz well. How do you disguise your blitz? Do you finish? Do you show movement on your blitz? Can you get around sliding fronts. Can you attack and find the holes? Just like you try to attack and find the holes as a runner, you have to do it as a blitzer. How effective are you with your blitz look? Can they play multiple coverage looks effectively? That's the fifth thing I look for. What personnel advantages do they have versus a variety of opponents? Can they get off the field on third downs? Can they get off the field on third downs? Red zone efficiency, starting in with that. Those are the seven things I look for on defense. Special teams. Oh, boy. You know, people don't spend a whole lot of time on special teams, do they? Just, does a kicker make the kick? Does somebody screw up? It's the only thing they care about. How about coverage units? How effective are the coverage units versus a variety of designs? Middle returns, outside returns, reverses. How do they progress to the football in coverage units? How disciplined are in their lanes? How quick they are down to make a play? Really important. Why? Not just for the big play. Not just for the obvious that jumps out at you and says, well, they made a return for a touchdown. Big play. But it's the little things. How you progress and the angle of which you progress to the ball will determine 6-8 yards. Well, let me ask you this. If you run the football for 8 yards at the line of scrimmage, pretty impressive, isn't it? Everybody's excited. Man, we ran that football 8 yards. Then on first down, it's 2nd and 2. Man, we got all sorts of options. Yet, when you're in a position to progress to the football and you miss an angle and you don't leverage it properly and the guy gets an extra 6 yards of field position on the return, what's that? That's no different than getting 6 yards on the next play on first down. That's hidden yardage. That adds up. And when you go back and chart it through the game, you flipped an entire field because of it. It has a cumulative effect. Really important. How much return yardage is given up versus how much return yardage is achieved? Really important. How effective do they maximize points in the red zone? How effective are they eliminating big plays and achieving big plays? Okay. Let's go over that. You have to kick a field goal. How many do you make? Simply put, how effective are you? Not just how many do you make, but why do you make them? When you don't make them, why aren't you making them? Yes, the field goal kicker is the biggest part of it. Yes, the snap. People will notice a high snap, a low snap. People will notice a hole that a guy fumbles. People will notice sometimes they do a good job on TV of showing how bad snap is held very well and put in position. But the other thing we don't know, but the things that are a little bit go unnoticed is what is their overall operation time? Because if the snap is just a tad slow, it'll break the rhythm of the kick, and that will lead to some problems. And I know it's a very precise element to kick the football. So all of those things need to be factored in, because when you don't convert in an automatic situation where you should be guaranteed 3, why don't you? And you got to know where the problem is, because that's how you fix it, by first properly identifying it. So do they win the hidden yardage battle and game-changing play battle? That's important. Some other things that I think can help you determine a little bit about some key players in key situations. Really important in this area. Look for average yards per passing attempt. Really important to understand. Your average yards per passing attempt tells you your confidence level in being able to test the field distance-wise. But it is also important to challenge, with the hash marks being different in college, how far is the throw, not just vertically, but horizontally. So you throw it maybe only in the stats, a 3-yard pass, but it's an 18-yard throw to an out. Well, you only care about the yards, right? Let me tell you why you shouldn't. Let me tell you why it's more important to understand everything. The total yards are important because it tells you the areas of the field that need to be covered. And so the ability to attack all parts of the field is important, because the more parts of the field that you force defenses to attack, the more you can spread out a defense and you've got less spots to find openings in which to make plays. So, average yards per passing attempt, average yards per throw. Two different things. So the yards per passing attempt, basically, horizontally and vertically, chart that. Average rushing attempts, really important. Folks, you take your pass completions and rushing attempts, and you get into that 50 range, you're going to win most games. It means you're completing the football, and you're running the football, and if you're running it a lot, you're running with success. Because when you're running it a lot, you're wearing down the defense a hell of a lot more than when you're throwing it. What's your third down percentage? What's your turnover margin? And what's your penalty differential? Those things are really important. Now, in college football, there is a factor that goes into the best teams with the most talent can overcome a lot of these stats. Make a bunch of penalties, you still blow out an opponent, nobody cares. But why is it important to not have penalties even in games when you win a blowout? Because what happens when you're playing an opponent that you don't dominate from a personnel standpoint? How clean you play a game, your turnover margin, your penalty differential, all these things are really important. Really important. I get asked this a lot, too, is when you're grading a play in the team evaluation, I look at this. People look again at the result. This is how I grade a play on a team evaluation. A win. A win is when a team out-executes an opponent on that play. Pretty simple. It's out-executing. Not the result was good, but that you out-executed the person. If you're on defense and you don't have the play covered and the quarterback throws the football and hits the receiver in the hands, you didn't win that play defensively. Okay, you got fortunate. So that's not a win, okay? Chart the wins. Chart the successes and chart the failures by the opponent. And we'll get into that in a second. The loss is when a team gets out-executed by an opponent on that play. Okay, so it's when you get out-executed. So, you got out-executed, pure and simple. You chart those. Unforced errors. This is really important. If a team makes a mistake and gets beaten on that play because of the mistake they made, not by the opponent outperforming them on that play. Pretty simple. Kind of use the tennis term. This is unforced errors when a team makes a mistake and gets beaten on that play because of a mistake they made, not by the opponent outperforming them on that play. An unforced win, it's when a team benefits from an opponent's mistake, not something you did to outperform them on that play. Important to understand. I can remember going back to the LSU-Alabama game. Remember the game, the 9-6 game in Tuscaloosa, and LSU won the game 9-6. It's a field goal fest, and everybody was aghast in Baton Rouge when I said, clearly breaking down the tape, Alabama was the better team. But LSU won. Yeah, I get it. And they deserve to win. Because Alabama made more mistakes in that game. And you win and you lose mainly by the mistakes you avoid as much as the plays that you make. But if you remember, they played 2 months later for the national championship. And in breaking down that game, people were aghast again when I said Alabama will win, and they might win fairly decisively. And people thought that was shocking. It was ridiculous. But LSU beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I get it. When you break down the tape and you look at the unforced wins and the unforced errors, pretty clear from an objective viewpoint that Alabama made the mistakes. And the reason why I thought it would change is because of how Alabama coaches – and how much better they get, and how that would correlate into some changes in the next game, and boy, didn't it. It was a dominating national championship performance in New Orleans. So, again, things that can help you learn. When you grade a player on each play, here's what it comes around. You grade the assignment. Did he do what he was coached to do on that play? The technique. Did he play with the technique that he was taught on that for that play? Technique's different depending on what you're asking him to do in that play. The athleticism for the position. Did he display the athletic qualities needed to execute the assignment on that play? Grade that. Then four, the execution. Did he execute mentally and physically the play that was called? The result. Was the result the desired result? Well, obviously you can see very often the result is the desired result. The guy pancakes the defender as an offensive lineman. He could have, from an assignment standpoint, messed up. From a technique standpoint, messed up. From an execution standpoint, messed up, but the result was good. Okay, yeah, the result's all that matters, but it's all that matters in the end of the result for that play. But when you break it down as a coach, his assignment, his technique, his execution were poor. By breaking it down, that's why we call it breaking it down, then we can go back and teach it to where we can improve his assignment, can improve his technique, can improve his execution, so that when he goes up against an opponent that he's not so dominant physically against, he can win. Because that's not a win on that play if he's not just superior athletically. So it's important to understand that those are things that I look at when grading a player. And look, if you're looking at things that are going to determine a lot of success in college football in a game: average yards per passing attempt, average rushing attempt, third down percentage and turnover margin. If you win three of these four, you're going to win 80% of the games that you play. So understand those things. Those are some key stats and evaluation processes that might help you as you start to study these teams and get a better feel for how to evaluate it and not be the guy that just says, well, I saw this game on TV and I think this and I think that. Know what you're talking about and provide some information that can be helpful, because I think those things are really important to understand. Grade to a standard, not just to who they've played, because, well, we don't know how good they are because they only played. This is what you can study regardless of the opponent. So, all right, with that said, let's get in. Spend a lot of time on that. Appreciate your patience. That was longer, but wanted to get into the details. Let me answer a couple questions, and then we'll get right into the college and NFL look. But before I do that, let me tell you about my good friends at Vivid Seats. Boy, they have been great for us here at the Landry Football Podcast. They've been great for me, too. You know, we all love that night out, whether it's seeing your favorite band or concert in person or being there in the crowd to cheer your favorite team. We've got a lot of stuff going on right now. We've got the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball playoffs, a lot of things going on, the NBA and the NHL starting up. Wherever you are, maybe you're visiting, you're going to be visiting a city. You've never been to a hockey game, never been to an NBA game. This is where you don't know where to go. Where do I go? You don't trust who you're talking to, scalpers or whatnot. This is your answer. The best place to go. You can attend any show, any concert, any sporting event at your choice for the best available price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code INFLUENCE. That's capital letters, INFLUENCE. INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater, much more. Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app. Enter the promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Remember again, 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Check it out today. I do. They won't steer you wrong. All right. I want to answer a couple of questions here and then we'll get into the preview. We've got all the college and NFL previews in detailed up on LandryFootball.com. So we like to save that for you to get a real good feel for it. But we want to kind of talk on some high points of these games of the weekend. So we're going to do that here in a second. But Kevin asks in the, so he reads the film room breakdown. Bears and Bucks, and looking at how Trubisky exploited the Bucks linebackers, and he's asking, was he exploiting their physical limitations, poor eye discipline, poor schematics, poor coaching? He was attacking them. They were out of position a lot. There were some eye discipline issues, but basically he was attacking them because mainly their front has had to be extra aggressive, and it's put them out of position by design to try to attack the run. The defense of the Bucks is not very good, and it led to a lot of issues there. So they basically baited the linebackers in a lot with the run, with the short pass, and they really attacked them down the seam. This is not a great coverage unit, but it's the biggest problem that the Bucks have is in coverage on the back end, and the linebackers are kind of caught in a little bit of the got to play the run, got to play the middle of the field, and they've got to take some chances to try to make some plays. The depth and the quality up front is, and the depth and the quality on the back end is not all that good. The overall linebacking core is not great, but it's not bad either. To answer your question, honestly, there was a little bit of everything you mentioned, but it was a little bit more of being over-aggressive to try to overcompensate for some other areas that defense that struggles. Kevin also asks, with the advent of spread RPO-oriented offenses in the NFL, well, there's not an advent, Kevin, of it. There's very little of it. Okay, but let me answer your question. With the advent of spread RPO-oriented offenses, structurally, on average, do you see an advantage of a two-gap defense out of a 34 front or one-gap defense? There's not a spread of RPO offenses. That's a little bit of a term that's used, and I don't think people understand enough about what it is. We'll go into that a little bit more in another time, but there's not a lot of spread RPOs, really not a whole lot at all. There's some of it that you see, but it's not a steady diet of it anywhere. You're seeing some of it, and the reason why you're seeing some of it with certain quarterbacks like Nick Foles, it was a better fit for him. But you don't see it. You certainly don't see it in Philadelphia with Carson Wentz nearly as much. And the reason why you don't see a lot of RPOs in the NFL is because the rules are called differently. The RPOs, in its pure form, it's illegal on the blocking end of it. And they don't call it. Basically, you can't run block downfield and throw the football. That's illegal, and it's called in the NFL. If you're 6-7 yards down the field and you're run blocking and you're throwing the football, that's a penalty. It's allowed in college football, and so it's why it's done more in college. In the NFL, you don't get away with it as much. Now, you do see some of it. You don't see to the extent of them going as deep downfield to block it, but you do have some built-in run bubble screens where you've got an option there, but you don't see much RPOs there that is a true RPO in college. You see some of the fake handoff and go to the screen based upon the read, but that's not the full RPO. So there's really no, it really doesn't affect in terms of if you plan a two gap or one gap. Let me explain again the concept of defenses. Good defensive play and defensive play in general, what the goal is to make sure that every gap is covered. The gap between the center and guard is a gap. It's the A gap. Gap between the guard and tackle is the B gap. Tackle, tight end, C gap, so on and so forth on both sides. Every gap has to be accounted for. It does not matter if you have a two-gap front and you have the big power space eaters that can cover two gaps, that can play over the center and cover the A gap on either side, okay? You can control the gaps that way. And you have the ends do the same. And the linebackers are free to roam a little bit more and fill the other gaps. Outside, run a stunt, then you have a gap coming on the inside, and maybe the end is covering the B and the C gap on one side. That's a basic. We've got big space power guys. One guy's going to control two gaps, or one guy's going to control in another scheme be one gap where everybody's in a gap. But everybody has a gap either way. You may have two, but every gap has to be covered. You don't change your style because your personnel dictates what you want to do. You can't sit there and have a guy who is a quick guy that is not as strong play two-gap. So you're not going to change or adjust. Well, we're going to play the two-gap front here unless you have the personnel to do it. Now, some do a little morphing of two-gap, one-gap. That depends upon the personnel that they have. Good, physical, strong run defenders on early downs, you play some two-gap. And in passing situations, you play one-gap where everybody's trying to get upfield. So the difference is in the one-gap scheme, you're trying to penetrate that gap, get upfield, catch the run in the backfield, rise the passer. In the two-gap, you're trying to control the line of scrimmage yourself in controlling two gaps while another defender, using outside backer, is playing that edge rush role where he's rushing on the outside, looping inside, or perhaps lined up inside on a given play and trying to rush, trying to get free because he's attacking another gap. So that outside gap, that C gap, that D gap, he's responsible for that. So the RPO doesn't have any effect on either one of how you play it. Your personnel dictates that. And so when you're trying to defend the RPO, what you're trying to defend is it's a run-pass option, right? So it's going to be a handoff through the A gap, through the B gap. Well, somebody's got that gap. That same guy's got that gap if you're running an RPO run or you're running a downhill zone run. The same gap still needs to be covered. Nothing changes. Now, the screen that's maybe built in to the RPO, that's the pass of the run-pass option. Well, again, that has to be covered. That has to be covered in your coverage concepts, which, again, has no effect on how you're playing up front. So I hope that gives you an idea, Kevin, of how that plays out. But it's good question there. Richard asks, what are the problems the Bucs have on defense, particularly in the secondary? They've got problems covering in the middle, deep middle. That's an issue there. They don't have a consistent enough pass rush. So when they bring extra pressure, and this kind of goes to what we talked about with Kevin. Yeah, so they're bringing extra pressure from their linebackers. And, you know, the linebackers are not getting beat on those plays. Just the offenses are beating them because they're not getting home enough on the blitz. And then they're not there in coverage because they're blitzing. So that's more of a what we call a conflict of assignment of what do you want done? You've got to get pressure in passing situations. You got cover. And quite frankly, the Bucs are not very good at this point in either. They're going to have to play more two deep coverage. They don't defend the run well enough to not tee the guy up in the box. So it becomes an issue. Comes an issue of how much they're going to commit towards the run versus how much they're going to commit towards the pass. It's a big issue. That gives you an idea of where they are. They don't have enough coverability on either side to be able to play consistently like they need to. And they need safety help. And when that safety help is there, it's not in defending the run. And so you've got to cheat a guy in to stop the run. That affects you in the pass. So there are times in which they don't have enough numbers in coverage. And there are times when they don't play well enough in coverage, particularly down the middle, when they're having to bring in extra pressure on blitz situations. So it's a combination of those things. Richard asks, what's your assessment of Michael Lombardi as a scout? I work with Michael with the Cleveland Browns. Michael kind of fits the category of a Gil Brandt. The telephone scout. He was not a very good evaluator of talent. Very bright guy, but he was a guy that, like Gil, could read other people's scouting reports and regurgitate it as if it was his own. But he really didn't have, I mean, he could tell you something about every player. It was often the wrong thing, but it could tell you something. He was not a guy from a real good football background, but he was a bright guy, as I mentioned. And he was a salesman. He was a guy that could talk his way into opportunities. That's why he's had like 8 or 9 jobs in the league, and he's been fired from everyone because he manages to talk his way into it. And the people that do the hiring, he's really bright about. He doesn't deal with the football people per se because football people kind of are on to him. But people that are not football people, he comes across as, man, this guy's really bright. He knows this because, you know, people hear this stuff and they hear him say stuff. They think, boy, it sounds good. And so he could get certain, like, executives, higher executives in an organization, maybe the right-hand man of owners, and he gets in the building. Problem is, in addition to not being a good evaluator, he's not a very good person. He's been known to backstab a lot of people. He's always trying to up himself at the expense of other people, and that's why I never really respected his work. I saw him firsthand do it, and it just wasn't very good. But you know, that's my opinion of it, and that's you know, I don't mean to be rude about it, but there are a lot of people like that. And again, they fool a lot of people, and a lot of people think that they're really bright and they sound good. But, you know, again, he's never really, you know, I know he takes credit for being around the San Francisco 49ers, and he wasn't even around there. He was an intern, and you know, he talks a lot about Bill Walsh, and I think he's written a book about it recently. Bill Walsh fired him. He was an intern there. I mean, he didn't have any people that worked there. You know, tell me, Bill Walsh didn't even know who this guy was. But, you know, again, he has a way of kind of attaching himself to certain things that and taking credit for things that really he had really nothing to do with. All right. Appreciate your questions there, and certainly we'll address any others that you have on anything related to football. In the college football world this weekend, one of the great games, one of the great treasures, if you not had a chance to catch it, I have been to probably over 20 of these, but Oklahoma-Texas. A lot of good games, but then there have been a lot of stinkers for a while. I've been to a lot of the good ones when both of these teams were really good, and I can't wait to watch this game in the early window on Saturday. Oklahoma's offense, that is simply outstanding, maybe, I think, better than last year's. You've got a lot of playmakers at receiver, a quarterback that I think is so skilled in running this offense, a Texas team that I think is going to play well, going to show up, play inspired ball, but do they have enough to score points? We break this game down inside the film room, check it out, we'll talk about the matchups, how this might play out. But maybe a little closer than first glance. At that same time, Alabama will be pounding Arkansas, no doubt, and trying to work through it. West Virginia will handle their business against Kansas, and they'll continue to move on. Maryland, Michigan. Michigan is playing better. But how much better? Did not play a complete game against Northwestern. That's the negative. The positive, found the running game, got back in the game, and won it. That could have easily been lost. We went over that on Tuesday. But, you know, Michigan right now is not playing well enough to be a real threat to beat Penn State or Ohio State. So their challenge going forward is, yeah, to win, but to get better so that they can beat a Penn State, perhaps. Heck, it's not a given that they beat Michigan State. We know how that's been before. Speaking of Michigan State, they get Northwestern. We'll see. This Michigan State team doesn't look like the same Michigan State teams of the past. You know, the running game is not as consistent. They're not as great on defense. This is a game, again, they've got to win, got to get better. A sneaky game, an underrated game, in my view, Boston College, North Carolina State. These teams are pretty good, a lot better than you know. NC State, unbeaten. Boston College, good defense. A.J. Dillon's not healthy. Got the foot injury. Going to be watching and monitoring that. Syracuse. Got to take care of business against Pitt, right? Pitt's not very good. Pat Narducci is getting tougher and tougher there. But those are a couple of games to keep an eye out in the ACC. Missouri, South Carolina. Important game. I know it's all about the teams that are winning, but these teams that really need a win, South Carolina needs one in a big way. At home against Missouri. Be interesting to see how this plays out. Then we get into the second wave of games. Definitely the highlight game is LSU-Florida. And by the way, all those early games, all these games, plus a lot more, are broken down inside the film room on LandryFootball.com. LSU-Florida, pretty clear, the best game, I think, of the weekend in terms of the stature. You know, people have asked me, well, how good is LSU? How good is Florida? Folks, that's what the season is for. Here's what I see out of LSU. A talented defense, well-coached defense. But they don't play consistently for four quarters. They have lapses. So they're not a dominant defense, but they're really talented. They're really good. They're the reason why, for the most part, they're successful. Offensively, this is not a great running team. They can run it, but they have to work their way into the run a little bit more than usual. And then in the pass. What that does is put a little bit more emphasis on developing the passing game, and I think that they've done that better than in previous years, where they've got Joe Burrow a little bit more comfortable, and the kid's protecting the football. He's not making a ton of plays, but he's making enough plays, certainly relative to who they've played. Now, I think they were fortunate to win against Auburn. Again, looking through the game and studying the tape, you know, it was a little bit more about perhaps what Auburn didn't do and the mistakes that Auburn made than what LSU did. But LSU made some plays when they had to. Auburn didn't. You can't blame them for that. That's more of a, hey, that's on Auburn. They didn't do what they needed to do, but LSU did. I think that's the only game where I could have said at this point in the year, because I think a lot of people are surprised, again, by LSU. I'm not. There may be one game better than I thought they would be, because I misevaluated Auburn. Auburn is not as good as I thought they could be, and even hasn't improved that much, quite frankly. LSU goes on the road, pretty good defense. LSU's more talented in this game. Florida's better coached, but it's in Florida. This is not a gimme game. LSU should win it. I don't know if they will. This will tell a lot about LSU. Florida, Georgia, everybody's always saying, well, if everybody does this, then anybody can be ranked anywhere. Bottom line is, we don't know, in a lot of cases, truly how good these teams are until you get further in the year. I just talked about how I evaluate these teams. Well, I evaluate them, but I evaluate them every week. There's enough of a sample size to get a feel, but not enough to get the ultimate feel. And I think in these next couple of weeks, 3 weeks, we're going to know a lot about this LSU team, this Florida team, this Georgia team, because they're going to all play one another, and it's going to start to separate a little bit. October is going to be a little bit of a separation, and November is going to be the stretch run, the way it always is. So we'll start to – I think LSU is the better team of the two, but I think it's a toss-up game in Gainesville. Clemson should take care of business against Wake. Quarterback situation is going to be the forefront. But listen, that defense got to take over games early now. That offensive line has to take control of games early now. Ohio State, Indiana. I think Ohio State, again, needs to start putting their foot down. I think with Alabama being the standard, teams like Ohio State and Clemson need to start playing with more consistency and exert their will against folks. Florida State, Miami, said how this game has fallen so far down the relevance role. I think it's only going to make monitor six for me in this. This is a shame, but Miami should win it. Florida State is worse. Miami is better, not good, but better. Oklahoma State hosts Iowa State. Interesting Big 12 matchup. Iowa, Minnesota, the Florida Rosedale game, like Iowa, a little bit on the road here. Arizona State, Colorado. Very underrated game in the Pac-12. Colorado, maybe the best offense I've seen in the Pac-12 this year. Certainly the best passing game. Laviska Shenault, folks. One of the best receivers in the country. Could be a really, really interesting matchup in the Pac-12 with Shenault. And when you're looking at Steven Montez, how he's playing, you know, it's going to be a real interesting matchup. Got N'Keal Henry as well in this game for Arizona State, too. Certainly the best receiver tandem with opposing teams in this matchup. San Diego State, Boise, Navy, Air Force. Kansas State goes to Baylor. That's in the second wave. Then the third wave in the 6 o'clock Central Time Zone, we've got Kentucky A&M, big game in the SEC. Kentucky looks to be the better team on film, folks. Can they handle the moment on the road, the success, the pressure that comes with you need to win or season's going to be, you know, a little bit of, not ruin, but take a downfall. Kentucky looks to be the better team on film. We'll see how well this plays out. Auburn, Mississippi State, boy, a big game for teams that need a win in a big way. Not going to be comfortable. Going to be uneasy for the coach that loses this game. Neither coach is going anywhere. You've got a first-year coach and a coach that is in the first year of a long contract. So it's not that type of uncomfortable, but it's the quality of life and disappointing year. Mississippi State at home after losing a couple of games that, again, folks thought that Mississippi State could compete in the West. Well, that's, again, part of the preseason rankings and why the preseason rankings don't matter, because you're guessing on things. And the bottom line is they're not as good. The offense is not as good. Nick Fitzgerald is not making plays in the passing game. So it's a game of two teams that have started off disappointingly. We'll see. Auburn's a little more talented. We'll see if that makes a difference in this game. Nebraska, Wisconsin. Nebraska can look across the field and say, this is where we should be. This is where we want to be. Wisconsin is just that much better. Yeah, this Nebraska team is not very talented, but Scott Frost needs to start owning it. When I hear him say things like this team is not disciplined, winning's not that important to him. It does not take talent to be disciplined. It does not take talent to give effort. And that's on you, Scott. This team is not good enough to beat Wisconsin, but it is better, and it is capable of playing with more discipline, more heart, more effort. And that's on Scott. It's time that Scott starts to take ownership of that. Vanderbilt, Georgia. Again, we'll see if Georgia kind of finish things off, kind of smooth out their quarterback situation, get some things squared away on the offensive line. That's been the problem there for me watching them. Washington, UCLA. Man, it's been a long time since Washington has won, and UCLA, they're going to do it this time. This UCLA team is fighting for any hope. The game, maybe the game of the day, if it's not LSU, Florida, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech at 7 o'clock Central. Going to see Bud Foster, Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. Going to be really hepped up for this game. Notre Dame, their passing offense, big moment. Probably the biggest test for Notre Dame the rest of the year, at least until they get to play USC at the end of the year. This is maybe the biggest obstacle. We'll see as we go along, but we'll see if Virginia Tech can create enough different pressure looks to cause problems for Ian Gole and that Notre Dame offense that completely outmanned and out-physicaled Stanford last week. We've got that game broken down in the film room as well as Nebraska, Wisconsin, Washington, UCLA, Auburn, Mississippi State, Kentucky A&M, Vandy, Georgia, all these games broken down inside the film room. In the late window, got some Pac-12 action I want to watch. Cal, Arizona. Cal's a better team than people might think. Arizona's still trying to figure it out. Boy, we truly see what Kevin Sumlin had to recruit Khalil Tate when he got the job. And, you know, Khalil Tate doesn't want to be a runner. He wants to be developed into a pocket passer, and boy, this made this team very ineffective offensively. Utah, Stanford. Utah, tough loss to Washington State. Stanford, fortunate win 2 weeks ago. Got beat up physically against Notre Dame. No rest for the weary there. Another physical game down on the forum. Colorado State, San Jose State, Fresno State, Nevada, Washington State, Oregon State. The Cougs should handle the Beavs there late. That's kind of the matchups this weekend we're going to really be honing in on. Of course, on Thursday night, we got Tulsa-Houston. Friday night, Georgia Tech-Louisville. Two programs that are really struggling. Good little intersection game. Middle Tennessee-Marshall also on Friday night. Utah State-BYU on Friday night. So, again, we'll be keeping our eye out on that. In the NFL, Thursday night, New England hosts Indianapolis. New England takes care of business, I think. Don't see Indianapolis playing well enough to be able to match up against the Patriots. Patriots, it's kind of the time now, folks, where these players that were suspended for 3-4 games, they're now back. Now it's 4 games. They're now back. So the Mark Ingrams of the world, Julian Edelman's of the world coming back. Tennessee going to Buffalo. Tennessee's playing good ball. Go on the road. Can't assume a win there. Playing good, good-looking overall team at Tennessee. Miami, Cincinnati. Can Miami rebound, get back on the road against Cincinnati? Cincinnati's defense not very good. Baltimore, Cleveland. Baltimore looks like the better team. Cleveland, all the excitement. Had the tie, worked their way up to a win. Couldn't close it out against Oakland. I know. Fans in Cleveland say the officials beat us. Hey, good teams don't get beat by officials. They take it in their own hands. Green Bay, Detroit, important game, particularly for Detroit. Both of those teams. Jacksonville, Kansas City is the highlight game of the week, no doubt. We'll see Jacksonville's defense, Kansas City's offense in Arrowhead. Going to be a lot of fun. Denver going to the Jets. Can the Jets look like the Jets might have a chance to start to make some noise after week one? Jets are 1-3. Lose to Denver on the road. Denver's not the same team on the road, but they're still better than the Jets. Could be a 1-4 start for the Jets. Broncos, tough loss to Kansas City. Trying to get back and go to 3-2 instead of dropping to 2-3. Atlanta, Pittsburgh, can anybody get off the field defensively? In Heinz Field, we'll see. Should be a shootout game. Giants, in their offense, going up against Carolina on the road. We'll see if the Giants can, A, get protection for Eli, and can Eli start to make some plays? Been an issue. Oakland goes to the Chargers. Hey, the Chargers have been a disappointment to me. A lot of people thought they could contend in the division. I thought they could as well. They're 2-2. They're not out of it. They're just not playing well. Capable of being in this division race, but when you don't play well, you lose two games. You're looking up at Kansas City that hasn't lost a game. It looks like they're not in it. They're still in it, but they don't have much margin for error. They've got to win this game at home against a team that they're better than, the Raiders. Minnesota, Philadelphia. Matchup of two teams that you could make a case preseason, two favorites in the NFC. Now you're talking about two teams that have underachieved. Minnesota really have not played well defensively, not been sharp on the offensive line. Philadelphia's lost a couple of games that just they don't look the same. We'll see if they can start to get it together. Arizona, San Francisco, oh boy. San Francisco probably gets this at home. Arizona's got to win at some point. Maybe this is one where they can get it. If it's on the road, it's tough, but they need a win. They need a win bad. The Rams are really good. They're better than Seattle. Funny how people don't fear going to Seattle anymore, huh? Yeah, I love the home field advantage. Home field advantage is great when you got a really good team in a hostile environment. Not so much now. The Rams are just that much better, and it's just a matter of if they have an off day, they're going to get Seattle's best game. So if they have an off day, that could be in danger. But other than that, it's a problem. Dallas, Houston, Sunday night, 1-3 Houston. Dallas excited about being 2-2. Nobody does mediocrity like the Cowboys. We'll see if Houston can get back in it at home with a second win or not. Hey, underrated game. Monday night, Washington, New Orleans. I think everyone has a good feel for what New Orleans is and maybe what is not. The Redskins are playing good ball right now on tape, grading out the best of any team in the NFC East, and it's reflected in the 2-1 record. Going on the road to New Orleans, it's a game the Saints should win, need to win, but this one may surprise some people as to how good this Washington team truly is. The Buccaneers and the Bears both played one another last week on byes this week. So that's a look at the matchups in the NFL this week. Hey, folks, we appreciate your time and attention today. I know we went a little long today going down into how we break down college teams. We hope you enjoyed it. We appreciate you joining us every Tuesday and Thursday, and joining myself and Scott Seidenberg on the College Football Podcast, Rush the Field. Every Wednesday you can catch that. Catch all of that on LandryFootball.com. And again, want to thank everyone that's become a member of LandryFootball.com. We want to make this challenge to you. Come join us during this football season at LandryFootball.com. If you like what we do here, you'll like the website even more. It is not much money. We do it because there's a lot of time, a lot of involvement, but we try to make it very affordable for you. Obviously, we charge a lot more to teams to do our consulting work, but you can get a tap into that side of things and learn the game in a way you haven't done before. Get information that you're not going to get access to in other media outlets from inside the game, inside the film room, inside the meeting rooms. That's what we do for you at LandryFootball.com. Join us. We've got great packages. Again, $60 for a year, $5 a month. What a great opportunity. And you get it all year long. You get the football season. You get it during the draft time. You get it during recruiting. You get it all year long. And what a great opportunity to become involved in getting all the information during the football season, getting the information during the coaching search time, which will be here before you know it, folks. That'll start to heat up in a month. We'll start breaking into that. We'll do a lot of coaching search work. We'll get into that information a lot more as that starts to unfold. Then we'll get into the recruiting. We'll get into the draft. It's all year-round football. And I know that there are certain times of the year you don't have as much time, but with the price that it is, you have access to go to it. It's easily searchable. You can go find your favorite team, your favorite conference, your favorite division, NFL, college. You can sort through whatever you want. Find access to it real easily. We've got all the information there. So check us out, and what we're doing, we are taking 50% of any membership payments. And I'm taking that along with the money that I'm donating to the victims, the flood victims in the Carolinas. Folks, as I've said before, the way I do it is I go in, work with the folks at the Cajun Navy that send the information, send the products directly. We get it from the shelters. They tell us what we need, and it's toiletries or toothpaste. You just don't know what some of these people are going through. So what I do is I go to Walmart every other day and get as much stuff as I can that's on the list. And so what I've committed to doing is anything that you provide that in terms of a membership, you buy a $59.99 membership, I'm going to take $30 and I'm going to put $30 towards toothpaste and deodorant and, you know, socks and anything that's on the list, and get it directly to the people that are shipping it over to the shelters in the Carolinas. So it's a way to get involved with the website and also do something that'll help folks. I'm going to do it anyway, so don't worry about that. But, you know, it's a little extra money that I can use to put it towards and help them as well. So we want to do that. So anywhere you can help us with that, we would sure appreciate it. Thanks a bunch for joining us, and we'll see you over at LandryFootball.com, and we'll see you next Tuesday on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
Breaking down Conor McGregor versus Khabib is not very hard. This is the old school MMA fight, grappler against striker. The thing that, as I have watched various people, you know, talk about this fight, do you get the perception that I get that people are counting out Conor McGregor in this fight?
I do to a small extent, but I do know you are a person who owns three Conor McGregor fighter kits. So I think you see life through lime green tinted glasses, Jason. And I see what you're saying, but I still see plenty of predictions for Conor first round knockout. I just think you're Team McGregor, Jason.
Well, look, if Conor's winning this fight, in my mindset, it is within the first 5 minutes. That's why when you hear my conversation with Brian Edwards, I talked about that prop bet that's out there about Conor winning the first round. Earlier this week, it was plus 500. You know, that is a prop bet you want to take advantage on. If this fight hits the 8 minute mark or so, or maybe even before that, maybe the start of the second round, it totally favors Khabib Nurmagomedov. There's no question about it. But I think the one thing that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, I mean, look, we all know that Khabib's grappling is by far the best in the UFC. There's no question he's the best grappler in the UFC. But when we talk about the huge advantage that Khabib has in the grappling, the advantage Conor has in the striking is just as big. And that to me is the part that people really haven't talked about. And I think the what's going to be interesting for me in watching this fight will be in the first 30 seconds.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.